Members, we'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business will be approval of the minutes dated March 6th, which Representative Reinhart has noted as she has read very carefully and moves approval of the March 6th minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first item on the agenda is House File 2083. And the chair will recommend House File 2083 be recommended to pass and referred to the Tax Committee. Members, there is a delete all amendment in your packets. And at this time, I would defer to Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, and or Ms. Larson to run through the, I believe it's the DE2 amendment. Is that correct? So, members, at this time, we will we'll begin the walkthrough of the DE2 amendment. Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom, Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chair and members, if I could ask you to, there are two spreadsheets in your packet that it might be useful to glance at quickly. If you could pull those out, one with a slightly larger print says education finance levies in the upper left-hand corner. The other one says education finance committee, and it's the appropriation tracking in the upper left-hand corner. We'll start with the levy tracking. It's fairly simple. You need one?
No, go ahead. I got it. It's right.
And there are four sets of columns. The first two are the current biennium. Levy changes that you make in this or any other bill this session will only come into play for fiscal year 14 and later, because fiscal year 13 is based on levies paid in 2012 and certified in the fall of 2011. So those are already set. And any changes you might make this session would take effect with levies certified this fall and paid next year for fiscal 14. So there are a couple changes in the DE2 amendment to House File 2083 that affect levies on a statewide basis. The easiest way to see those is to look at the House minus current law difference columns. There's the furthest right column shows that change for fiscal 15, and the fourth from the right column shows that change for fiscal 14. Further, any changes are highlighted with italics under the program description. So the first change is on line 8. The equity levy is reduced by $10,800 per year. And that is based on the date change qualification for equity revenue, and affects the Northfield School District. And then the next change is also on the first page on line 61, a $2,000 reduction in the building lease levy based on the inclusion of the bill that allows Faribault to levy for administrative space in lieu of educational space. And then on line 72, you see a line that says last year transition equity operating capital adjustment and $10,800 in fiscal year 14. What that is the provision related to that date change for equity that affects the Northfield School District is actually effective for fiscal 2013. And since, as I said, the changes you make this year will only take effect starting in fiscal 14, that provision actually requires a retroactive reduction in fiscal 14 for fiscal 13, and that's carried on line 72. So when you get to the bottom, the very last page, the total certified levy after credits on line 195 results in a net reduction of levies of $23,000 $23,600 in fiscal 14 and $12,800 in fiscal 15. One note, because we'll go right to the aid spreadsheet then, is that because levies are down, the property tax revenue recognition shift, which is about 50%, is affected. And reduced levies means less shiftable levy, which means shift savings loss. So on line 11, if you switch over to your aid tracking sheet, you see the property tax impact of the levy reductions. And to orient you to this sheet, the first six columns are the February forecast data. The last eight columns are the changes that would result as a result of the DE2 amendment. And and again, if you want to highlight the changes, you can look at the house minus base columns, the furthest right column and the fifth from the right column. So you see on line 11, $6,000 of cost. And what that is the shift cost of not having as much levy over on the levy tracking sheet. And that is $6,000 a year, and it lags 1 year forward of the actual year that the levy change takes place. So now to orient you to the balance of this spreadsheet, there are two types of changes in the DE2 amendment to House File 2083 to appropriations. One type of change that will not show up as a change on this spreadsheet are forecast changes. Some of the programs on this appropriation tracking sheet and in your jurisdiction are forecasted, and the dollar amounts needed to fund those programs change whenever the forecast changes. We've had two forecasts since you finished your work up last summer and made the appropriations for the programs in this area. And so, for example, on line 17, enrollment options transportation, there's an amendment in the DE2 amendment is a change to the enrollment options transportation program. But you see the difference, house minus base is zero. So that change is simply a change to amend last year's appropriation to match what's currently being forecasted as the need for that program. So that's one kind of change that you'll see in the DE2 amendment. The second change that may encompass forecast change will include changes from changing the school aid payment shift from 64.3, which is where we ended up at the end of the February forecast, to 70.2%. So what that results in is additional appropriation being made for fiscal 12 and 13 for each program that is shifted. Not all programs are shifted. Not all programs are forecasted. The ones that are shifted will show a change from base in those house minus base columns. So the very first appropriation line, line 10, the general education appropriation increases by $351,206,000 compared to base. That increase is due to the change to 70.2% on the aid payment shift. And so normally what I do in my tracking sheets is put an italics on a program name if there's an actual change in that particular program. So that if you don't see an italics, for example, on general ed, that means that the difference from base is simply from the shift change. And that's true in all but the case of the property tax on line 11 and one change further on that I'll point out. So all of these changes, the $351 million additional in general ed, going down that column, are all additional spending that's required to increase the appropriations to a 70.2-29.8 basis. And if you go down to line 129 in the middle of the second page, there is one provision in the DE2 amendment that eliminates the fund balance reduction penalty in some early childhood programs. That has an aid impact in fiscal year 15 on the school readiness program, and so you can see a $50,000 increase over base in fiscal 15, and that comes from that particular initiative, so that's why it's italicized. Then if you go to the bottom line, you go down to line 208, the appropriations in the general education program, the difference from house minus base is about $429 million. That's the additional payments that will be made to education appropriations because of the 70.2% shift. Then on line 214, property tax aids and credits are also paid on a shifted basis at the same rate that school district payments are. So there's an additional almost $1 million allocated for that. And then on line 215, there is a reduction savings of $430 million, 094, which is a cancellation from the budget reserve to the general fund, which effectively pays for the shift changes that happen up above in the appropriations. So when you look at line 221, that encompasses all of the changes, the net difference house minus base is zero. There's $430,094,000 of additional appropriations, and there's $430,094,000 of cancellation from the budget reserve to the general fund, resulting in a zero change in general fund impact on line 221. And then you can see on the bottom part for informational purposes what's happening to the shifts, the shift totals, based on what happens in the DE2 amendment.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, did you wish to go through the research summary at this point? Oh, no, this is the part of it, just the part of the research summary. Excuse me? Yes, please, just the Article 2.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the Mr. Chairman, members, on the H2083 DE2 amendment, looking at Article 2 that begins on page 7, there are a number of provisions, all of which I believe the committee has seen before. Section 1 is a bill that Representative Myra introduced. It clarifies the definition of public data to include settlement agreements in lieu of salary or other compensation. The next number of sections, 2 through 4 and also 6 through 8, are from a bill that Representative Peterson introduced having to do with unrequested leaves of a leave of absence and discontinuing physicians affecting teachers generally and also in the first class city school districts. Section 5 is a bill that Representative Loon has introduced. It proposes to allow a board to suspend teachers without pay if they are charged with a felony and the that corresponds with ground for immediate discharge.
Mr. Chair, members, as Mr. Crow mentioned, the appropriations are throughout this bill adjust for the shift and the forecast changes. Remember, the forecast change adjustments have no cost for this committee. The shift adjustments do have a cost for this committee. In general, you're going to see the appropriations going up by the relative amount of the increase in the shift percentage. If you do see an appropriation going down, that is because of the forecast change. Presumes the same level of commitment to the program and rather just reflects the February 2012 forecast. So sections 9 through 15 of this article are the appropriations that are in Article 2 of the bill that are being adjusted for the forecast and the higher aid payment percentage shift. Mr. Chair, Article 1 of the bill is the general education article. There are a few provisions in here unrelated to the appropriations. Those are Representative Dietrich's bill regarding non-public pupil aid. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are the identical provisions that were passed from this committee a few weeks ago. Section 4 is a clarification that the other materials now, the software and other technology, are subject to the same oversight and same uses as the textbook, so keeps it consistent. That was a suggestion from the Department of Education to give clarity to the first three sections of that provision. Mr. Chair, if you turn to Article 3 then, there are simply appropriations in Article 3, the special education article. That's on page 19 of the bill. The same is true for, and then in Article 4, starting on page 21, The first several sections are the appropriations, and then, as Mr. Crow mentioned, on Section 5 is the administrative lease for the Faribault School District. He talked about that's effect on the fiscal spreadsheets. Moving on to Article 5 on page 23, the first section has to do with the way that the aides are paid to charter schools. With the changes that were adopted last year, the charter school payments were concentrated in payments throughout the first part of the school year, with 16 payments giving them the full 60%. What's added is the new language on pages on page 23, lines 23.20 to 23.23, and this essentially stretches out that payment schedule to go back toward the 24 payments if the shift percentage increases, so that it more evenly matches the 90% shift payment. That section then goes through the through to page 25 in section 2. The bill this committee heard from Representative Lemire regarding school food service funds is included as it was passed, or as it was heard by this committee. And then in section 3, the shift percentage is changed on line 27.6. We're not putting the intermediate step in here. The shift, although the statutory rate is 60%, the February forecast adjustment pushed that up to 64.3%. This bill would raise that further to 70.2%, makes this effective for fiscal year 2012 and later. So those payments would go out at the higher schedule in the payment period after this bill becomes effective. The next three sections are simply appropriations adjustments, and then Section 7 is the language necessary to cancel the unobligated balance in the budget reserve account of $430 million to the general fund, so that can be appropriated through these higher appropriations because of the aid payment shift. Article 6 is simply the appropriations changes to reflect the higher aid payment shift level. Article 7 is the first several sections reflect the higher aid payments, and then Section 4 of that article, which is on page 30, is the fund balance penalty being repealed for the ECFB and school readiness programs. The fund balance penalty for the community ed is in the following article. Essentially, those are repealed effective for fiscal year 13, but the way the adjustment works, as Mr. Crow explained, is we won't see any fiscal effect on our tracking sheet until fiscal 15 with those. Finally, Mr. Chair, in Article 8, the first couple of sections are Representative Mariani's bill that was heard and passed by this committee. That's followed by the appropriations adjustments, and then in Section 7, as I mentioned earlier, the community education adjustment occurs there as well. So, Mr. Chair, that's a quick summary of the provisions that are in this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Larson, Mr. Crow, and Mr. Strom. Is there any discussion on the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question of Ms. Larson on Article 2. When you noted Article 2, you said that these provisions had all come before us previously, and I just wanted to clarify on the ULA provisions, whether this is actually the same bill that we heard in the informational hearing on Tuesday, or whether this is a different version of that bill.
Ms. Larson. Representative Peterson, do you wish to...
Mr. Chair, Larson? Representative Breinhardt, the provisions of 1870 that are in this bill are from the first unofficial engrossment, which is the bill as it passed the House floor. And I believe that's the copy of the bill that this committee heard the other day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may be incorrect, but my recollection is the bill we had in front of us Tuesday did not include probationary teachers, and this version does include probationary teachers. So I may be incorrect, but I'm looking for clarification on that.
Ms. Larson, Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Representative Peterson wants to address this as well, but the provision, I guess I'm not quite sure what we had on the calendar the other night for 1870, but the provisions that are in here reflect the bill as it passed the House floor. So what I can tell you, I can't tell you what we did last week, but I can tell you what's in here is the unofficial engrossment, the first unofficial engrossment of House File 1870.
Representative Peterson?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could, I didn't draft this particular bill here. What line are you looking at, Representative Bryan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, 1019 in particular, I'm sure it appears somewhere else, but it says including probationary teachers.
Yeah, that Representative Peterson. I believe is consistent with the bill that we heard earlier. The requirement, the additional probationary requirement, in order to permit the retention of a probationary teacher is still not included. It just simply says that that process applies to probationary teachers as well.
Any further discussion, members? Seeing none, Representative Briner, or Representative Dreiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm honored to be confused with Representative Brinert. I have a question and a comment. I was surprised when, you know, we had the day off. We went to Senator Kubley's funeral yesterday, and then we come home and find out already up today we have the omnibus bill. And I'm wondering, is this the omnibus bill, or is there going to be another omnibus bill, or how are you thinking along the lines of the process for managing the bills the rest of the session? And the omnibus bill, normally the minority gets it and has a chance to digest it, and I appreciate that you gave us till 11 o'clock today to do amendments rather than shut us out from that altogether. But it still didn't give us a lot of time to be, you know, processing the whole thing like we normally would. So I just want to register that complaint. And then my question is, will this happen again, or is this the only omnibus bill? And if so, are the bills after this from now until the deadline just going out separately?
Representative Dreiling, I'll try to remember all the questions and answer them all for you. First of all, with regards to a second bill or more bills coming forward, that's certainly an option that I think the committee should continue to plan on meeting in the coming weeks. So that's an option. As committing to there being one bill or a second bill, that's not something I don't know. We'll have to see how the legislative session unfolds. As you are correct that when the delete all amendment was put out there, technically I could have said 24-hour rule applies. There's no amendments, and so I know that you know, when we were in the minority, you gave us at least a day to be able to review the bill, to offer amendments, and so that was the same courtesy that I extended to you. And then was there a third question that I missed, or was that it?
You know, Mr. Chair, I've forgotten, too.
Okay, good.
But,
so.
but the main point that I did want to make is I don't think you, however, did give us enough time.
Yeah.
I don't think you did give us enough time, because we were, a lot of us were off at Senator Kubley's funeral, and the people who weren't, you know, thought it was a day we didn't have committee, and so people just weren't around. And so we didn't have notice to gather together the minority members to really go through this bill with the staff like we normally do and plan ahead. We're big kids, and we can roll with punches, but I think if there is going to be any other big omnibus bill or small omnibus bill, I would appreciate that we would have more time as we gave you.
Thank you, Representative Dreiling. And as staff noted, and I believe you mentioned in your comments, that these every one of these articles are items that we did have hearings on and had a full discussion on, so going back to January. But I appreciate your feedback, and it is duly noted. So do we want to move the DE2 amendment, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brinert and Representative Peterson were on the right track there. I've made a drafting mistake, and I've brought in the Senate version as the first unofficial engrossment, not the second engrossment with the House floor changes. This is my mistake in this document. So I think what would make it easiest is to have me run up and have that version substituted for these, since that was the chair's request to put the bill as passed by the House floor into this document and then proceed from there. So I think from an amendment point of view, it would be easier to hold this until that amendment is ready, pop that amendment on, and it puts 1870 into the form that you requested into this bill.
Well, what we'll do, Mr. Strom, you go ahead and begin work on that. And what we'll do, I know, members, this is not customary for how we would take public testimony, but we will, what we'll do is we'll take public testimony on the delete all amendment, get that conversation done, and then we'll move to the DE2 amendment and then work on the amendments that have been offered to the committee in advance of that. Representative Greiling.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just another process point, our amendments are drafted to the DE2 amendment, so we would want to take those up before we vote on that.
To the?
The delete all amendment.
Okay, so you want to vote on them as amendments to the amendment,
yes,
as opposed to adopting the DE2 amendment?
Yes, Mr.
Understood.
Chair.
Okay, so we will not at this point, we'll take public testimony. This is a public hearing. First of all, are there any members of the public who are not paid to be here, as we call them real members of the public, who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Because you get priority. You get to go first. All right, seeing none, then we'll go. We will go to the paid testimony. And let's see, we have anyone signed up for this yet? So it's first come, first serve. Is there any member of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we will close the public comment portion of this bill. And perhaps, Representative Greiling, we could begin having discussions on the amendments before we take action on them. Is that some? I know this is unusual, but so what the chair will do, the A1 amendment is the Myra amendment. Representative Myra, you will not be moving your amendment, but you can explain it to the committee for any discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spoke with the Civil Law Committee Administrator, and basically the gist of this is the same as what passed out of this committee on Tuesday. We just added some clarification.
Okay, thank you. Any additional discussion on that A1 amendment, members? And again, I know this is an unusual process for members of the committee, but we'll then move on to the next amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We could the DE2 amendment is before us, so I meant we could now vote on her amendment because it's an amendment to the amendment.
That is right. You're right. Okay. So unless we had any amendments, Representative Myra, your amendment is not going to be in the applicable section that's being modified. So yeah, we couldn't vote on that. So seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the Representative Breinart.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Myra, would you just clarify a bit what the amendment does?
Representative Breinart.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we added the word complete in front of the word terms, and we also put in there additional wording. Let's see, the complete terms of any agreement for arrangements resulting from amending, terminating, or otherwise modifying the agreement. And it's just adding more clarification. The section down 1.25 through 2.2 basically is the same meaning. It's just worded more clearly. It was kind of cumbersome before, actually, when I spoke to the civil law committee administrator. He suggested that we just clarify that. So, thank you.
Any additional discussion? Representative Dabney.
I hate to be picky, but...
Hold on, Mike, that's what you're
here. I hate to be picky, but you told Representative Myra that she was not moving the amendment. So, on a technical basis, before we vote, the amendment's not before us.
I believe I said, though, that Representative Myra, after I was corrected by Representative Greiling, I believe I said that she is moving the A1 amendment. If I didn't, I just said it now.
And you just said it now. Either way, you're covered. I said, I hated to be particular. I didn't hear that part. And, you know, just...
Representative Dabney, I'm not wearing the right shirt today. What else are you going to talk about, right?
Nice talk.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now, the next amendment I have is the A4 amendment by Representative Greiling. And Representative Greiling, I believe this amendment, this is something that we can work on. We can
Mr. Right Chair, now. I move the A4 amendment as an amendment to the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. To your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, while I complimented the chair at a panel that we were just on right before this committee about keeping the topic of the debt to schools constantly before us, I think that's something to be applauded. I applaud it. We have to pay this money back. It affects our bond ratings, and it affects the borrowing rates for all of our levels of local government, not just our schools. So I'm very glad that Mr. Chair and members of the majority party brought forward this bill that includes this topic. it's near and dear to all of our hearts. I would like, however, to propose an alternative on behalf of our caucus that we think would be a better way to do it. The way that this bill before us is doing it is it's taking the money out of the reserves and then applying it towards the school funding debt. And the A4 amendment has a permanent source of money, and that is the corporate loophole closings, the things that our tax committee has been discussing for many purposes over the years, tax havens, foreign operating corporation loopholes, royalty subtractions, foreign partnership incomes, unitary business sales attributable to Minnesota, and real estate trust dividends. That last one is actually something Governor Pawlenty proposed at one time to pay for his jobs bill in 2010. These are all things that are good tax policy, and by the way, they raise permanent revenue. In the year, fiscal year 2013, they would raise $194+ million. In 2014, it would be $151.9 million, and then $157.3 million. So it's an ongoing source of money. That's what we need to pay back our school debt. That would help our schools and benefit them. And that way we could leave the reserves where they are. I agree that we shouldn't just wait around until we have money that comes up so we can pay back our schools. But I'm hoping that this would be an amendment we could all agree upon would be fair to everyone in our state, would not be an undue hardship for anyone. It's a very narrow application of the corporate loophole discussions that the tax committee has had. They've considered many others, but this is a very narrow application that I think would give us a very good plan for systematically every year paying back our debts to our students.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Anything else?
That covers it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to this amendment and the discussion, if we do as standing without the amendment, do we not have, you know, like twice as much reserve as was left by the previous legislature? Does staff have or anyone have that information?
Representative Quam, I don't know if Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow have those numbers, but I can cite them and they can nod in an affirmative fashion that at the end of last session, the cash accounts were about $275 million. And under this proposal, the cash flow account, the cash accounts combined would be twice that, about a little over $577 million. But we do not have MMB staff here to confirm that, but those are what the numbers are. So, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We do have MMB staff here, so. Yeah. They can just nod their heads and say, yeah. Representative Downing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a question for Representative Greiling. I was trying to write down those numbers as you went through them. Could you review what the revenue is in, I think you're talking about fiscal years, not biennia. Could you just repeat those numbers by fiscal year?
Yes. And, Mr. Chair, I actually only have one copy of the handout that I got from House Fiscal staff. So I don't, and I've got my notes on it, but I'm happy to have it copied by the pages so we could all have it as well. But I'm going through, if we repeal the foreign royalty subtraction starting in 2012, repeal the foreign operating corporation also 2012, the unitary business sales tax attributable to Minnesota, all these are 2012, tax havens, foreign partnership conformity, eliminate the dividend received deductions for real estate investment trust. All of those total up to $194.2 million in fiscal year 2013. And then for the 12-13 biennium, it would be the same. And then for fiscal year 2014, it's $151.9 million. And in fiscal year 2015, 2015, it's $157.3 million. And then for the fiscal year 14-15 biennium, it would be $309.2 million. So,
Representative Greiling.
So, Mr. Chair, and you know, to Representative Quam's question that I can't remember if Representative Downey was adding on to, yes, there is a lot of money in the reserves, and that is statutorily set for how much this legislature has thought that that we need to be a responsible fiscal state. And you know, we could discuss whether we want to put some of that to schools, and apparently Minnesota management and budget does not think that's a good idea. They're worried about their cash flow. But we have done the same thing to our schools. So this is a way to help out the schools, come up with the money, and we don't have to risk ourselves coming back for a special session if we should run short at the state level.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was trying to sort out these numbers a bit, but it appears to me just on the surface, and there's other reasons, I think, to oppose this amendment, but as I added up, Representative Greiling's amendment would accomplish a shift payback over a three-year period of time that your amendment would accomplish essentially instantaneously or in this fiscal year. And so I think that's, well, you could argue the merits of trying to create a dedicated funding stream for the long haul to pay off the shift, which we all want to do. This seems, in my mind, to come up woefully short compared to your proposal, only $194 million in the remainder of this biennium, whereas we'd be north of $400 million with your amendment or with your proposal. So I think if we really want to pay back the shift, we would do better actually to adopt your proposal and then in the out years figure out how to pay it back a lot faster. This doesn't even pay off 10% a year if I'm doing some rough math. So I think we should be more aggressive. We've got a chance to do it. As Representative Quam mentioned, we're still leaving ourselves in a much better cash and budget reserve position, even with this shift payback, than we were even close to contemplating in the budget we passed last year. So I just think for a variety of reasons relative to the shift, we should do that. But I'd also like to point out to members, we're actually in Representative Greiling's bill. We are changing tax policy under some of our best corporations here almost halfway into their operating year. I mean, these tax policies are started, what, four or five months ago? And so now we're going to change tax policy and have a huge impact on some of our best corporations, and we've debated even just the merits of these provisions. And I think the provisions themselves are bad tax policy provisions. They hurt our biggest job creators and our best corporate citizens here in Minnesota. So that alone tells me I wouldn't vote for this bill regardless of these other things. But then on top of it, we're retroactively changing tax policy on them. Starting this thing January 1, 2012, they're well into their operating year. They've already planned around their existing tax environment. And then on top of that, the bill doesn't even hardly pay back the shift at all compared to your proposal. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd argue against the A4 amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Greiling, I believe your amendment is on top of ours. It's not replacing it, or is that the point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the clarification I was wanting to make, and that I think it will help Representative Downey and others, Representative Quam, like it better, because I didn't explain it very well. This is not less aggressive, it's more aggressive, because this amendment is on top of the amendment that we have before us, taking the money from the reserve. This is saying if we're going to, and so I didn't explain that well, because that's part of the problem when we don't have enough time to get ourselves up to speed here. But it does go on top of the amendment. It's taking all the money that's in the proposal before us from the reserve, the 400 plus million, and adding this sheet that now has been passed out, so you have the numbers. So I think Representative Downey will now like it a lot better. If you like aggression, this is aggressive, much more aggressive than the wimpy proposal that Representative Garofalo's bill has for paying back the schools. And then as far as the tax questions, I think we should just vote for this here because we do things in this committee that are good for kids, and then we send it off to the Environment Committee if it's the permanent school fund, and they may disagree with us because they don't always put the kids first like we do. But this bill is going to the tax committee. So if they don't want to put the kids first like we are, they can reverse direction if they want to consider the businesses and the fact, if you look at this amendment, that they have tax havens off in Monaco and Panama and Tonga and the Bahamas and you name it. They figured out places to hide money so they don't have to be taxed. They figured out places to have companies that aren't in our state. They have business in our state, but they put the nexus for their business in another state where the tax rates are lower. There's all sorts of tricks that businesses have come up with to not pay their fair share for our schools. And so if you're on the tax committee, I think you are, you know that. And but this is very appropriate for us to do here, prioritizing the kids over all these tricks that businesses have to not pay their fair share for them. So aggressive. We should be talking about the kids here in this committee, and if you don't like it, argue the tax stuff in the tax committee where it's going next.
And members, as a reminder, we are in the Education Finance Committee, and although this is a tax provision, Representative Greiling is correct that the expenditures are going to Education Finance, so that's why the amendment is being allowed to be debated. So we have, if you could please keep your conversations focused on the Education Finance aspects of this. That goes for both sides. Representative Dabney and then Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to join Representative Greiling in thanking you for bringing forward the conversation on paying back the school shift. Folks who know their history know that for a long time it was a 90-10 shift, which is, I know at one point at least, it was to the consternation of the chair because it was largely a historical artifact. Back before personal computers and all of that, they couldn't calculate student numbers and the complexity of the formula like fast enough, doing it, pencil and paper and green eye shades, I think. So they went to 90-10 to increase accuracy and make sure that school districts were getting the appropriate revenue based on their student numbers and composition. With the computers, we could do it a lot faster, but first Governor Pawlenty demanded, and then last year in the closed budget negotiations, the GOP demanded that we increase the shift first from 90-10 to 70-30 and now 60-40. So bringing attention to this is positive. Some of you may know that I actually teach personal finance in my real life outside of this place. And that's where I prefer Representative Greiling's approach to the chair's, because the chair's approach simply is not fiscally responsible. And we have a responsibility to the kids of the state in terms of their education. We also have a responsibility to the kids of the state in being fiscally responsible. And I think right now this legislature, this biennium, is getting an F on that. What Representative Greiling's provision does is backfill. It provides stability underneath the repayment of the shift. Just yesterday, in fact, I was teaching a basic budgeting class to a group of job seekers who are in a job assistance program, and we talked about having an emergency fund. Why have an emergency savings fund? Well, the more stable you are financially, the better you are able to weather the ups and downs of the economy, healthcare problems, potholes on the street that do damage to the front end of the car, whatever it may be. And it allows you to then, because you're more stable, to establish financial goals and move forward on those goals in a way that you're more likely to be successful. The chair's approach moves Minnesota back from that fiscal responsibility and that kind of traditional Minnesota fiscal conservatism that says, you know, first we're going to make sure we're stable and take care of that, and we're not going to take risks that we don't have to. And Representative Greiling provides an answer to the don't have to. So she does, her provision is a step towards Representative Winkler's and others' Pay Our Kids Back Act that actually moves the entire $2.4 billion that we owe the schools, over almost $4,000 a student, and sets up a process for paying that back. So it goes much further in a fiscally responsible manner, and I think that's important. Two things, Mr. Chair, if I could. I like Representative Greiling's amendment so much, I'd like to have a roll call on it when we get to that.
Representative Dabney requests a roll call.
Thank you. And then my understanding is we not only have MMB staff in the room, my understanding is possibly sitting behind me is the commissioner.
Right. And
would he be able to come, would the chair entertain the commissioner coming down and being able to reflect on these issues that have been raised?
Apparently, when I had asked for public testimony, the where is the commissioner? There he is. He must have been waiting for me to call him down by name. But Representative, or Commissioner, if you're okay with this, Commissioner, if we can work on the amendment, and then we'll bring you down so you can have a more thorough discussion about your conversation with your testimony to the committee. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Ward, and then Kelly.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I just urge you to support Representative Greiling's amendment. I think, like Representative Dabney, Representative Dabney said a lot of what I was going to say, so I'll try not to repeat some, but I'm going to repeat some because I think it's worth repeating. You know, let's not forget that the overall projection here is we still owe our schools, as has been indicated, at $2.4 billion, and also we have a $1.1 billion dollar shortfall going the next session. That's $3.5 billion without inflation. With inflation, you're talking another $1 billion. And personal budgeting, Representative Dabney, just like you have indicated, is very, very important. You know, as a fiscal conservative and as a fiscal responsible person, but always, Mr. Chair, one of the first committee meetings you said we're always going to keep kids first, and that has been mentioned a couple times today. So let us keep kids first. Let's have this as a win-win-win situation. A win for kids, a win for fiscal conservatism, a win for fiscal responsibility, because that's what this truly is. That's what this amendment truly does. It provides a way that we can keep the reserves that we are going to need probably in the future. I mean, we're going to need to, as indicated by projections, we're going to probably need those reserves and have that money available for us as we move forward in this state. But also, let's get our kids paid back. And this amendment allows that. It allows for the reserves to be statutory where they were supposed to be and allows our kids to have a little bit of their IOU paid down on them that we so important for all of us to do that. So I really, members, urge a support of Representative Greiling's amendment for a win-win-win all the way around. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Representative Kelly, and then Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, what a great discussion to have. How we're going to pay this back, and I applaud you for bringing it forward as in a responsible way. But if you just give me a little leeway here, I've got to piggyback a little bit on Representative Downey's issue of the business environment that we're looking at, because I think we just have to highlight a couple of them, because we're asking businesses here to not take any deductions that we get federally. We're looking at exempt interest that all of us can use in qualified dividends. Representative Enzels, I think you would be amazed that we're asking that they could not take losses from business mining. And then finally, we've got businesses who are very environmentally sound that put in pollution control facilities. We're saying that that's exempt, that they can't take exemptions for them being very good stewards of the environment. I think we've got to be careful of what is all in here just to pass it on to tax committee. So I would vehemently oppose all of these items that are in here along with this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually wondering if anyone was here from the department who could speak to Governor Dayton's been calling for businesses, corporations to get on board and adopt schools, and I've heard him call for that a couple of times, and I was wondering if anyone could report on how that's going, because I sure could from our school's perspective.
Welcome to the committee. Yeah, we can have Mr. McHenry come down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. Yes, sir, and Representative Bills, the Commissioner Caselius, along with the governor, has initiated an adopt-a-school program that's voluntary for businesses to work with schools. It's something that that has been that's expanding, but as far as an exact count, I don't have that on me right now. I can get that to you, but it's something I think that we're trying to promote throughout the department, on our website, and also reaching out with schools and businesses. And it's been something that has been received very well in communities with between the schools and with the businesses. So it's something that we're looking forward to.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that is wonderful. That's wonderful news. And in, at Rosemont High School, we have not only all the local businesses who now advertise with us, whether it's in programs or in our gym now or at the football field, et cetera, various things. But we also have companies like Flint Hills and SKB and larger companies who come in and help us out too. And I see that this, what Representative Greiling is trying to do is to gain some of their revenue to help the school shift, but actually those companies are reaching out to our schools trying to help them. So I just wonder, you know, the you squeeze a tube of toothpaste, it's going to come out somewhere, and you know, I don't know if that will that be headed towards the schools then, or are we actually weakening these corporations and these businesses that are now willing to help our schools out a little bit? And I actually had one other question. In terms of the tax incident study, I was just wondering if there was somebody who would be able to tell me if the corporate tax is a progressive or a regressive tax. If it was regressive, hurting the, you know, falling on the lower incomes, or progressive, falling on the upper incomes.
Representative Bills, the corporate tax is a regressive tax.
Okay, and I've learned around here to never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. So that's great to hear. But it's not great to hear, is it? Is that the corporate tax is a regressive tax. So now we're going to look at paying the school shift back by increasing a tax that falls on the poor hardest. And I sure would be all for, and I have been all for, all, you know, trying to get some traction in tax reform. It would be great to create a whole new sandbox with all new kinds of with a different way to formulate our tax structure. One, and again, one for the 21st century. Some of these things are antiquated, but I don't think that education finance is the place to be rewriting your tax policy.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bills, you brought a smile to my face. I've not heard corporate tax havens before defined as falling on the poor. That's a new one. But enjoyable. You know, I mean, I'm not a tax expert, but it seems to me that, you know, answering the issue of progressivity is really based on having a comprehensive look at your tax code. What makes it progressive isn't the application of one particular tax or another. It's the mix of those taxes. And what we've learned, you know, for I think as long as we've been a state, is that in order for us to do our, you know, due diligence of providing a stable form of governance here, you have to have a proper mix of taxes as well as a proper mix of revenues and or rather expenditures. And so it's not as simple as you know, picking out any one of these taxes and saying don't do that because it's regressive. Regressivity is really based on the mix of that. But you know, we could, you know, I don't serve on a tax committee. Maybe I should get on here so you and I can have fun and debate that back and forth. Yeah, Representative Kelly, your observation, and it's also a tax observation, of course, about, you know, the state then applying a different, you know, scheme or framework relative to what these corporations are allowed not to do at the federal level is actually a moot point. The federal government has no responsibility to deliver K-12 education to any state. We have that responsibility. And we expect then that all citizens, and Supreme Court says these corporations are citizens, have a responsibility. And so I understand what you're raising in terms of the, you know, the different approaches, but I don't apologize as a state legislator to turn to our corporate community or individuals and say, you know, you have a responsibility, and you can do whatever you want at the federal level. You can pay for the war in Afghanistan if that's what you really want to do. But your responsibility right here, right now, is to our kids. And Representative Bills, you know, I as an individual and lots of thousands of Minnesotans help our schools every day over and above paying taxes. I go and I read to my grandson's kindergarten class at Adams Immersion, for instance. And I still pay my state and local property taxes because I don't think that that's an exchange. And so I would caution you on that one issue of us setting a burden on these corporate citizens because they're going to, you know, any given year pop for some money to pay for a track or something or books. They should do that. You know, God bless them, you know. We should do that as individuals, but that does not, in my mind, exempt them from the universal responsibility that we all share to support our schools with tax revenues. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, and this is a question for you. Representative Greiling, what I like about your proposal is, and you said it, it's a long-term permanent plan. And so, Mr. Chair, I guess, you know, because we're going to be, and this vote is partly going to come down to comparing whether or not a long-term permanent plan approach at this, you know, committee is better than the proposal in the DE2 amendment. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering what is the chair's plan for a long-term permanent approach to take care of this issue over and above this one-time, you know, hit to the reserve fund?
Well, clearly, Representative Mariani, the best plan for Minnesota and for its citizens is to grow revenue through increased economic expansion and additional job creation. That's my plan. Well, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, fair enough. And, you know, we all want that outcome. But I think what's going to happen here is that given our current economic state and given all the other obligations that we have in our state, because it isn't just the K-12, although I think it's the single most important one, I have a feeling it's going to be a long time before we can go back to that reserve, and that doesn't sound like a good strategy for me. Again, members, you know, based on, you know, my comments earlier, it is our primary responsibility to provide for public education for our students in our state, and I, for the life of me, don't understand why it's not appropriate for us as legislators to ask more of the citizens of the state in order to do that. The return on investment of that is well documented. We, for generations, have always said that this is the right thing to do in our state, going back to the Depression era. So, members, I do support Representative Greiling's plan here. I think, you know, it isn't a bet on what's going to happen in the future. It's a plan right here, right now, to provide long-term, permanent support resolving this issue of the debt that we've incurred on our students.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, there's been a lot of good debate on this, and I it's not my intention to prolong this unduly because I know there's other amendments to be considered. But you know, as a member that also serves on the tax committee, in addition to this, I just want to offer a couple of observations, and one is that, and tax policy is not just a matter of numbers. It really is a matter of psychology and influencing behavior. That's largely what tax policy is. If you want less of something, you tax it more, because that's generally how it works. And you have to think about that when you're looking at policies like this. And I know that Representative Greiling is with all good intentions for the school children of this state with her. With her amendment, and so I applaud that wholeheartedly. But my concern is sort of that law of unintended consequences and what happens. Because as we hear all the time in the tax committee, you've got to balance that place of having good corporate citizenship, and I'm going to define that as it's been described in this committee of providing for the resources and contributing to the resources of this state to do the very important things we need to do and educate our children. But balancing that with the competitive marketplace that those corporations are in, and at what point do we push them out of the borders of Minnesota and somewhere else where it's just easier and less expensive to do business. Taking those jobs and those good-paying jobs that we're trying to educate our children to have someday out of Minnesota. So we have got to look at that balance, and I'm just really concerned that this is going to, again, perhaps with all good intentions, may have some very good folks who have been in Minnesota for years and having great jobs that we want to have in our state decide that they've got facilities elsewhere and it's just easier for them to move the rest of their operations outside the state. So I think we're going to hear from the commissioner of MMB as well. And I hope he'll talk about the forecast a little bit and what that showed. Our corporate taxes actually fell. So that good news we saw with regards to our surplus and that is not coming from the corporate folks. Okay, they're making less money, or at least they're paying less taxes, according to our current tax laws. So just something to think about when we're looking at this amendment. And I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to support it, Representative Greiling. I applaud what you're trying to do. I just think we're not sure what those consequences would be. And from that standpoint, I can't support it.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on the talk we're hearing about being good stewards and protecting the reserves that we have. I enjoy that, or I appreciate that that more conservative talk coming from my colleagues. But if I understand Representative Greiling's proposal correctly, she wants to be more aggressive and put this on top of what we're already planning to do with the DE amendment. So if we adopt this amendment, we're going to be doing exactly the same thing to the reserves as if we don't adopt it. We're going to be taking those reserves down to that about $500 million level. So this amendment, if we adopt it or not, wouldn't change what happens to our reserve account.
Representative Downey, and then we'll go to the author of the amendment. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping to respond to Representative Greiling earlier. A couple of things as I think about being aggressive. Representative Greiling, you might want to sign on to the bill that I just dropped in that would freeze state spending in the next biennium at its current levels, and with the $1.9 billion surplus that we would have, pay off the entire school shift in the next biennium. So you might want to look for that one when it gets introduced, and you can sign on with me. And frankly, I think that's a much preferable approach, and I like your aggressiveness, and I was thinking in my head as I heard your comments saying this was additive, how I could actually do an oral amendment to your amendment that would somehow make this just a spending cut. But your amendment's pretty complex, and I didn't want to run staff through the ringer to try and do that. But in my mind, I think this is just a matter of priorities, and you're evidencing one priority, and that's to impose a $194 million tax increase on our best businesses, our biggest job providers in the state of Minnesota. And if you use the governor's logic for the translation of millions of dollars into jobs, when we talk about a $200 million bonding bill or a billion-dollar bonding bill and all the jobs it will create, if I use that same logic, this $194 million tax increase on our businesses will actually cost the economy 5,000 jobs. And so this is just plain and simple, $194 million tax increase that's going to cost our biggest businesses a bunch of jobs. You're changing tax policy on them under their feet after the fact. This thing is retroactive to many months ago. They've already planned their world, and it's radically impacting tax policy. And I actually had a question maybe for the chair or for staff. So if we pass this bill as it is with all the tax policy implications and it went to the tax committee, and they could they undo these tax policy changes and change the education appropriation as well? Could that committee do to us in K-12 finance what we in K-12 finance are doing to that committee?
Representative Downey, the Tax or Ways and Means Committee could do that. That could happen. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be clear.
Thank you. Representative Greiling, closing comments, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't serve on the Tax Committee. I always kind of would have liked to. But even I know, Representative Bills, that there's a difference between corporate taxes that are regressive and they've actually had bipartisan interest in making them more fair. Even I have agreed with that. I wouldn't want to do it in isolation, but I agree that should be part of a tax reform policy. Representative Loon said if you want less of something, then you tax it more, or if you want more of it, you would tax it less. What I would like less of are tax dodgers. The ones that are needing to be corrected here and put this money towards education are dodging paying taxes. They have havens off in other countries. They rearrange their business structure so that their business in Minnesota is taxed at some other state's lower rate. You know, corporate attorneys are pretty brilliant people, and they have come up with a way to save themselves on a biennial basis over $300 million that could be going to things like our schools or paying back our debt. So I do want less tax dodgers, and we should vote for this here. And, in fact, the reason we picked this funding mechanism so we could be more aggressive than Chair Garofalo is because we noticed that in the property tax division, not only all the Democrats but also all the Republicans on the House property tax division voted for this very funding mechanism. They all voted to get rid of, I don't know if you serve on the property tax division, so you may not know that, Representative Loon, but all the Republicans on your party here in the House who do voted for this to get rid of the marriage penalty. So we thought Republicans could vote for it for one purpose. Why not put it to a higher purpose, which would be our kids? So we want, and then if they did have to do that, they would be paying more taxes, and that is what we want. We don't want the corporations paying less taxes. The good ones need a better system, but the ones that are dodging their fair share need to be called on into account and pay that money for our schools. So those are reasons why. Join your Republican colleagues on the property tax division and vote for this for our kids.
The clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Chair? I thought we were going to hear from Commissioner Showalter.
We're going to hear from the commissioner when we're done with this. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzell?
Yes.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Reinert?
Yes.
Representative Daphne?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Fabian is excused. Representative Greiling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Ward?
Yes.
Representative Woodard?
No.
I thought for sure someone was going to say da. There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Members, we have the A11 amendment. We'll call this the Strom Amendment. This was to put the bill in the form so that the amendments from the minority party are germane to those. This is, again, a technical correction to put it in the first unofficial engrossment. And I want to thank you.
Second engrossment,
whatever it was supposed to be. And I want to thank the staff for quickly turning that around, and we appreciate that. All those in favor of the A11 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Members, in addition, the A1 amendment we are adopted needs to be brought up for reconsideration. The chair will move reconsideration of the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Ms. Larson, we have the A1. The chair will move the A1 amendment, and there's a correction that needs to be made. But could you please tell the committee what that change is?
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much. It is a technical mistake. It pertains to the H2083A1. And if you look on the bottom of page 1 on line 26, you'll see that there's a reference to the payment of more than $10,000. Well, on page 2, line 1 and 2, that language has to be stricken so that it's not duplicative. So what should have happened is all of the remaining language at the end of page 2, line 1, and the language on page 2, line 2, up to the semicolon needs to be stricken. It was simply an engrossing error.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. Okay, at this time, Commissioner, you want to go now or you want us to take care of these next two amendments? Thanks. Okay, so we'll move the, you want to come? Okay, so go. Commissioner, it is an honor for you to esteem us with your presence. And, you know, we actually, we like it when commissioners show up to this committee. So, at least this chair does. So, welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name for the record is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. Appreciate the chance to talk about a particular concern that I think the committee is well aware of in the nutrition and accounting section of the bill. It took a little while for us to find it because usually I don't look in nutrition to find uses of the budget reserve, but it's really a significant financial management issue, and I appreciate the vigor that this issue's already been debated, and I want to encourage you to continue thinking about this and hopefully reject use of the budget reserve, even for a purpose as important and I think uniformly supported as paying back school shifts. The budget reserve is there because of the last couple of improvements in the forecast. I think we've all heard some of the discussion of how the economy has performed a little bit better than expected. And that's allowed us to use long-standing triggers that are in current law to restore the cash flow account, to restore the budget reserve, and to start paying down the school aid payment share. That process is there and has been there for quite a few years, and it's served us very well. And it's really based upon a really pretty simple piece of logic, which is you want to make sure that the state is on stable financial footing before you start paying back the school shifts. You don't want to get into a situation where you have no rainy day fund, you have no ability to handle the risk, and then find out that you need to go back to the ship for more money. In the presentation before the Ways and Means Committee just last week, I think it was last week, it's hard, they sort of all mushed together, maybe it was even earlier this week, we talked about the uncertainty going forward. You know, you never know what's going to happen in the future, you never know how to forecast what's going to happen. You do know that there's some variability to that. And Dr. Stinson talked about, well, how much typically might you expect the forecast to change between now and the end of the biennium? That would be June 30th, 2013. And on average, it's about 3% up or down. 3% of a $30 billion budget is about $1 billion. And so we're right now at about the reserve level that would be necessary to handle an average amount of risk on the off chance that things went faster. That's both budget and cash flow reserve all rolled into one. To let go some of the rainy day fund at this point in time would just basically say, yep, we're betting. We're hoping that it's going to go good. But we have very few tools in order to manage any kind of bad outcomes, any kind of downturns going into the future. To wit, the mechanism leaves us with a zero balance. We all talked about it in the forecast just a few weeks ago. The forecast takes the money.
You said a zero. What do you mean by a zero balance?
The available balance in the general fund at this point is basically we took the money, the improvement in the forecast, and used it to start paying or replenishing the budget reserve and then paying off some of the school aid shift.
Okay, so that's outside of the $1 billion
right.
Cash on hand. Okay, gotcha.
And so to the extent that there's any, if we're not all on the upside, come November, or not all on the upside in February, we will have a new budget all on the upside in February, we will have a new budget deficit. And at that point, we were going to have to find some way to solve that in the intervening 4 to 5 months that remain. With fewer and fewer options available, fewer and fewer, more and more drastic measures that are necessary. That's why the budget reserve is there. That's why the statutory language is there to make sure that the state has a rainy day fund. Because we know there's forecast error, there's economic risk, there's all kinds of changes that happen. So, you know, just from a simple, if you think that there's a pot of money that's called a budget reserve that's there and you want to use it, beware. There are significant risks, and in terms of responsible financial management, this is a very bad idea. The other issue that's really big, and it's more inside baseball, is just cash management. There isn't an account in the general fund with the $653 million sitting in it right now. On a cash basis, our cash goes in and out all the time. And in 2013, as we also testified before Ways and Means, we expect a pretty bad-looking year for 2013. We really don't have that money until the very, very end of the year. So what this will likely do is exacerbate the cash flow situation for the state, probably mean, push us even harder towards the likelihood that we are going to be borrowing as a state next year, and certainly ratcheting that number up, and all in the likelihood that we still may be looking at the schools for budget solutions down the road. So there are a number of financial issues here, and I want to get those all on the table, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Commissioner, we appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule. My apologies. We've received your request late, and when I asked for public notice of testimony, I thought maybe you had gotten tied up in a previous hearing. Just a quick question. Regarding the cash flow issue, right now, according to the documents we presented in Ways and Means, the payback portion of the shift, schools get paid back in the months of July through October. And this bill proposes that those be accelerated into the end of this fiscal year, which according to documents are when the cash balances are projected, at least based on the November forecast, to be at their highest. How would that negatively impact the cash flow?
Great question, Mr. Chair. And it goes to the notion of a forecast. We are looking at projections of spending savings through June 30th, 2013. We're looking at revenue changes through June 30th, 2013. Applying those all to payments March 15th, April, May, June, means that we're essentially borrowing from parts of next year into this year. And so we're sort of taking cash that we haven't realized yet because it's savings or new revenues that we are expecting next year, next fiscal year, and starting to pay that out now.
Commissioner, one last question. Is it the position of the governor that he prefers to have cash on hand as opposed to paying back the shift?
Mr. Chair, I will speak for myself, I think the governor spoke to it quite directly at forecast time, but certainly the statutory triggers that make sure that the state has a rainy day fund, that it has the ability to manage its fiscal responsibilities internally without going outside, are first and the biggest priority. It is a common desire and expectation that we will pay back the schools and that we will look for budgetary ways and hopefully forecast improvements in the future to do so.
Commissioner, we greatly appreciate you taking the time to stop by. Can you stick around a little bit or do you got to go?
I'll stay for a couple minutes.
Okay, we'll go to two questions, one from each side. Well, that works out well. We have Downey and Ansells, and then we'll let you get going. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. And I was actually trying to come up with these numbers earlier this week when I saw the way the shift would be applied to our cash and budget reserves. And my understanding is that the way it gets applied, we're left, at least under the forecast, with $1.008 billion in reserves, both crossing over the cash reserve, which is $350 million, and the budget reserve, which is $653 million. And so that leaves us flush by law. That's the maximum amount we're obligated in law to carry. And so I was curious, what were those numbers? What was the anticipated cash and budget reserve for the end of this biennium under the budget agreement that the governor and the legislature agreed to last summer?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, after 21 days of shutdown, I believe the cash flow account was left at about $275 million. There was no budget reserve left. I think the point is well taken, that this is still a better place than we were before, but I think it also undervalues just what a bad space we were in and have been in and frankly continue to be in as we work through the budget and the obligations that we've piled up over the last several years.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, that wasn't the question I asked. Under the budget agreement that was reached for this biennium, what was previously projected to be our cash and budget reserves at the end of this biennium under that former agreement before we realized these surpluses?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, maybe I'm misunderstanding. Are you talking about what was the projection of the budget reserve as of July of 2011, or am I catching the wrong
Representative
period of time that you're talking about.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Under the budget that we agreed to last summer, fast forward to the end of this biennium, what were the projections for budget and cash reserves under the budget that the legislature passed and the governor signed?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe I, as Mr. Chair stated earlier, the cash flow count, I believe, was at 275, and there was no budget reserve.
I never miss an opportunity to correct the commissioner. I believe the cash flow was at 266, and the budget reserve was at 9.
Curses. Thank you.
So it's 275 overall, but yes. Very good. Representative Downey.
And then under the governor's proposed budget, obviously we didn't adopt it, but the governor proposed a budget after the February forecast. Do you remember what the projected cash and budget reserves were going to be under the governor's proposed budget at the end of this biennium?
You know, Representative Downey, I've given you a lot of latitude on this, and we are in the Education Finance Committee. I'm going to let you answer this one, Commissioner, and then we're going to move on to Representative Ansel's. Commissioner.
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that that number actually came down. I don't know the exact number. We can certainly provide that. It's on our website. The point, I think, was that at that point in time, there were a lot of competing priorities. It was a very bad financial situation. Agreed. Since then, we have started to move back, I think, to the shared place that, at least historically, the legislature and the executive branch have both shared, trying to make sure that Minnesota's finances are in the most stable condition possible, and that we don't shine some of the instability that we may incur because of the economy or other things on the business sector, on schools, and other elements. The first thing to do is to continue building up those reserves, and that's what been in law for quite a few years.
Mr. Chair, can I just make a comment on that? Because the point of my line of questioning was every single budget proposal that came before this legislature, the budget agreement that was signed by the governor, everything we've dealt with up to this date, literally had cash and budget reserves. Our reserves were way down in the $100 million to $200 million range. And if the argument against this proposal is that we can't write the checks to pay our monthly bills because we're taking from our cash reserve, that argument just doesn't add up. We have literally three, four, five times as much reserves right now as was ever contemplated in this budget scenario. So to argue against this because we somehow can't pay our monthly bills, I think, is a false argument.
Representative Ansels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. in light of the commissioner's presentation, which this member wants to thank you sincerely for the presentation, and frankly, Mr. Chair, with no disrespect to you, this member feels that it would have been much, much, much more appropriate for this committee to have had the opportunity to hear the commissioner prior to taking that vote on the Greiling Amendment. And I know, Mr. Chair, your clearly stated objective was to keep these matters separate. It's this member's judgment that the matters are inseparable.
And Representative Ansels, we opened up the announcement to the floor for public testimony. It was my intent to have the commissioner or any other member of the public testify in advance. So that is the misunderstanding, but Representative Ansels, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you. Commissioner, we greatly appreciate you stopping by. It's nice to see you. Don't be a stranger. Stop back again sometime.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next amendment we have is the A8 amendment. Representative Slocum, my understanding is that's your amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slocum moves the A8 amendment. To your amendment, Representative Slocum. And members, just to, we will be finishing just a little bit after 2:15. We are in room 200. And we'll make an announcement on the floor of when the committee will reconvene, unless we're able to finish this up in the next 25 minutes. So, Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A8 amendment goes from the 2083DE2, and it on page 9 deletes section 2 with the limited term licensing. On page 10, it deletes section 3 on unrequested leave of absence. On page 11, section 4. Unrequested leave. Section 6 on page 14, discharge of teachers. Section 7 on page 16, layoffs. And on page 17, section 8 on teacher reassignment or assignments. And I'd like to move that. Has it been moved?
Yes, it has.
Okay, thank you. What the aid amendment does is it removes the red herring in this bill. This part of the bill, referenced in A8, is the most extreme version of Representative Peterson's bill. Representative Peterson's bill is in conference committee. Am I correct with that? So it makes adding and including this in this larger bill premature. Including this is wrong on a number of levels. Not only does the bill deal with tenured teachers, but it includes probationary teachers in reassignment. Teacher evaluation work is in the beginning phases, far from ready, with stakeholder buy-in, and again, making the sections in this bill premature. This bill is anti-collective bargaining and local control. Local control and collective bargaining between teachers, administrators, and local school board. I don't get it. How come big government needs to come in? Also, if this is reform, Minnesota ranks 47th in the nation in class size. This isn't reform that addresses what we need. Reform to plan to fire teachers. We should celebrate our great teachers who consistently give us students who rank number one or two in the nation on the ACT tests. We all know that the real problem here is that we borrowed $2.4 billion from our kids and are spending $727 less per student than we did in 2008 when accounting for inflation. I urge you to support the A8 amendment, please.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Slocum. While I won't engage fully in the rehashing of the argument about 1870, I just want to address a few points that were made. The comment was made that this version is the most extreme version. It is, in fact, the only version. It's the second engrossment that was passed by the House, so that's why it's included. The probationary teacher language, well, you were correct in your preparation for the committee hearing, and by the way, for the record, Representative Breinert was, in fact, correct. I was confused. My understanding was that the House version was supposed to be, and now the A11 does not include the probationary language. The suggestion that the bill is anti-collective bargaining, if that's true, then current law is anti-collective bargaining. We have the same mechanisms. We have a negotiated option as with a state backup or backstop. And a comment was also made that this is a plan to fire teachers. And everyone on the committee and everyone that's on the policy committee knows that the ULA process is not a is not a proactive measure. The bill only addresses something that would happen in any case due to a lack of funding, declining enrollment, or school mergers. So, again, the bill does not inherently fire any teachers. It deals with a process that happens and will happen continuously with a majority of districts in declining enrollment, regardless of funding. So, I thought those points were important to point out.
Any further discussion from members of the committee? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. The A9 amendment?
Yes.
Representative Dabney moves the A9 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a attempt to take a different approach to the LIFO issue that we just touched on with Representative Slocum and Representative Peterson. It's a very different approach from Representative Peterson's, however. This is a collaborative approach that respects the professionalism of our teachers and their critical role in education. It also, and to me this is quite important, it protects school choice programs. We have decided as a state that school choice is a key strategy. The Peterson B language threatens school choice programs, their integrity, and the ability of parents to rely on the integrity of the programs that they've chosen for their children. And it requires districts and teachers' unions to negotiate issues of seniority and licensure and layoff within their collective bargaining agreement, and in fact prohibits them from closing the contracts without an agreement on that those areas. As you'll recall from testimony, 40% of the school districts in the state already have language in their contracts related to this. This puts a couple of more guideposts on them in that protection of school choice, but builds on where a significant number of our school districts already are. And again, I like this one so much, Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney. Any additional discussion from members of the committee? Representative Peterson, Mariani, and Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dabney.
And
again, I'm not going to get into the merits of the bill. I think they're, the House has taken a position on this issue. This is clearly and deliberately not included, or clearly and deliberately not the version that the House has taken, and so I'll leave that alone. And then just one comment I want to touch on. Representative Dabney mentioned respecting the professionalism of teachers. I would say that current law ignores the contributions of individual teachers in the classroom in favor of an arbitrary measure that has nothing to do with performance. I think that House File 1870, in fact, dignifies the profession by differentiating amongst the true professionals that are in the classes, and that's just my commentary.
Thank you. Representative Mariani, Erickson, and then Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I do support the amendment. Let me just say a couple things. One is that, and the House does have a position, that's correct, with Representative Peterson, that came off the floor of the House last week or so. But I think it is important for us to have a vote on what essentially is Representative Corey Katz, what eventually became a bill. He was working on this throughout the session, and for different reasons we never got a recorded vote, and so I welcome the opportunity to have one on that. I think that the amendment before us raises some pretty legitimate issues, or attempts to address some legitimate issues that Representative Breinert has repeatedly raised. And we can have honest differences of opinion on this, but it's still a legitimate issue, which has to do with the validity of the framework that will yet emerge either through individual school districts negotiations over the course of the next year, or a state framework. I think Representative Breinert raises some important issues about what is the right timing relative to establishing a valid database of information upon which we're going to make some high-stakes decisions. This issue, no doubt, will continue to be on the table as we go to conference committee. I think that, and of course, Representative Dabney's amendment addresses something we didn't even think about during the course of the year, what do we do with schools that are being repurposed, restructured, the SIG schools. I mean, these are schools where, in fact, you know, they've had this huge turnover by definition, or not by definition, but by action of the restructuring. And so it does logically beg the question of, well, you know, now that you've done that, you've turned over, you know, then why apply this immediately? Why not wait to see what the outcome of that is? I think that's correct. I think where there's some good overlaps here is that it still keeps the expectation that, the mandate, frankly, that that there be negotiations. I think Representative Kath has repeatedly raised the issue throughout the year of what happens when one raises questions relative to someone's employment that might invite all sorts of grievances on the part of the teacher who feels that he or she has been wrong. And so I think one kind of common good approach here has been is that we're acknowledging that we need to build these things into our contracts because by definition, you know, if you're a teacher, you've signed off on that contract. The language does also continue to push out the primacy of seniority, except again for the five-year exemption for these repurposed schools. So I think it's an amendment that's honestly offered it's a better approach than simply saying no. I've repeatedly have publicly said that I don't think the legislature's response should be to not address this issue, and I would urge your support.
That was Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Much of what is in the A9 amendment was a bill I carried last year, and it was rejected.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak in support of this amendment and the broad concepts it represents in relation to the extensive discussions we've heard around LIFO, last in, first out. The key issue, in my estimation, has been, and the testimony we've heard, that seniority, while it has an appropriate role and is supported by research as a relevant aspect of employment, ought not to be the sole determination in unrequested leave decisions. I agree with that. Performance should have a place. I've been an advocate for performance measures for the last 20 years, in my school district for 12 years, and in the legislature. The point is, what performance measures with what certainty and validity? What this bill, what this amendment does, and what the bill behind it, Representative Corey Katz's bill, does, is not to preempt what the tool is and what its accuracy will be in the evaluation process. So it says seniority isn't the sole measure, and performance should have a role. The evaluation process is relevant. But it doesn't go beyond that to determine how that evaluation process will be taken into account. It's much more respectful of the process we have put into law to shape an evaluation tool. So I would urge strong support for this amendment. I think it does. It's in complete agreement with the public testimony we heard on the relationship between performance and seniority, but allows a process that we have put in statute to move forward in a respectful manner.
Thank you, Representative Reinhart. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a response again to a couple of points. Representative Mariani pointed out that this A9 amendment keeps the mandate that there be negotiations. And I do think it's worthwhile to point out that, as does 1870, the second engrossment. In fact, the structure of 1870 is almost exactly the same as current law, in that there is a locally negotiated option, and if that doesn't happen, then there's a state backstop. Under current law, obviously, that backstop is the seniority mandate, and under my proposal is a three-tiered or three-measure decision-making process, licensure, evaluation outcomes, and indeed seniority. So my bill and structure is virtually the same as current law. It fills the void of current law almost perfectly. And then just one comment that Representative Reinhart had made, that this bill does not preempt the work of the Teacher Evaluation Working Group, but that but she also mentioned that performance should have a role. And that is an interesting comment, because it almost means, it's almost an endorsement of not using any sort of objective tool, or not even attempting, but making purely 100% subjective decisions as it relates to teacher performance. Again, in 1870 does not take effect until after the evaluation working group, and I think we had this discussion in the last time. I believe that the working group should have the opportunity and be informed as to how that tool is going to be used before they go ahead and develop it. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzels?
Yes.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Reinhart?
Yes.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Fabian is excused. Representative Greiling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Quam?
Nay.
Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Ward?
Yes.
Representative Woodard?
No.
Thank you.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Members, that completes all our amendments. We'll move to general discussion on the bill. Any discussion from members of the committee? The chair will request a roll call on the amendment or on the bill on House file. Oh, we're still on the DE2 amendment. Okay. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The bill is now amended in the form the author would like. General discussion on the bill as amended. Representative Depp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'm going to encourage a no vote on the bill. I don't think that this is a fiscally responsible approach. It may be a stab in the dark, but the problem with that is that stabs in the dark last summer in a closed and locked capital is how we got into this mess. Merely taking a shot at a brief temporary response is not a solution that is worthy the work of this body. We had an opportunity with Representative Breiling's amendment to move forward in a fiscally responsible way that recognizes the current economic situation and budgetary situation of the state and moves significantly towards repaying the shift, but in a way that increases revenue by closing tax loopholes that have nothing to do with job creation, because you can't create job with money that's sitting in other countries. The language that we were just debating does not represent either a consensus and bipartisan position on LIFO. There is space for that, but it does require the majority to move past bumper sticker education reforms and dig in and do the hard work, something that the majority to date has been unwilling to do. And I think it's an opportunity for this committee to say now and here is where we begin working bipartisanly for the best interests of Minnesota kids. We roll up our sleeves and we get to work, and we say that by voting no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. The chair will offer his thoughts, and just I want to thank members of the committee for their work on this. I particularly want to thank members for their lobbying to the Ways and Means Committee to once again, for the second consecutive year, negotiate a very favorable target for this committee to give us the opportunity to not only pay back the shift from last year, but to begin working on paying down the increase in the shift from the previous legislature. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Anzel?
No.
Representative Bill?
Yes.
Representative Reinert?
No.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Downey?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Fabian is excused. Representative Breiling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
Yes.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Plum?
See.
Representative Slocum?
No.
Representative Ward?
No.
Representative Woodard?
Yes.
Representative Plum, can you move to the table with your testifiers? My understanding is that you have some people who traveled from out of town, so we're going to move very quickly. 1 second. Let me announce the roll call, Representative Dietrich. There being 14 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 2083, as amended, is adopted. Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you for this little moment here. I just wanted to say what an honor it is to serve with, I have had to serve with two education finance chairs who take this school shift very seriously. Chairman Garofalo and former chair Representative Greiling have had the school shift on their lips for the past 4 years, and to put their money where their mouth is I think is just really commendable, and I think that everybody, no matter how they voted on this bill, can be proud of the way that you two have handled yourself in this situation.
Very nice, Denise. Thank you very much. Representative Quam will move House File 2604 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Quam, please proceed with your testimony and introduce your guests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Pull up another chair, Representative Quam. That's okay.
Well, I will, but
there's no rule in this committee on a two-chair limitation. There's one chair of the committee, but two chairs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a fairly straightforward bill on allowing flexibility of school boards, and I think it's best to listen to a couple of superintendents. We have Beth Gies from Cannon Falls. She's the superintendent there. And Mark Robinek, superintendent at St. Charles.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and board and members of the committee. I will make this as quick as possible. I come before you today representing 20-plus...
Excuse me, just one moment, please. Could you... Welcome to the committee, and could you please state your name for the record?
Beth Gies, superintendent of Cannon Falls Schools.
Thank you.
I come before you today representing 20-plus school districts in southeast Minnesota. Our journey began back in November when we came together as superintendents and board members to find common legislative agenda. I remember that evening very well. Mike Menendez, superintendent of Rochester Schools, was chosen to facilitate the process. We split into several groups and to discuss our concerns and our issues. Anticipating that we were going to have several different concerns and issues, we developed an activity to help us reach that consensus. As each group reported out, we quickly realized that we shared very common concerns and issues. 20-plus school districts coming together, united, working together for students in southeast Minnesota has been unprecedented. We come before you today in one voice asking you to help us through this very financial crisis. In a crisis, managers need room to maneuver. Those who are entrusted by the public and the state with that responsibility providing essential services must also be given the authority to carry out those responsibilities. If responsibility and authority are not linked, there can be no accountability and no meaningful problem solving. Public education has gone through a period of 10 very lean years, and while it has been harmed less than other sectors of the state budget and the tolls for years of inadequate funding, it is becoming evident in a number of ways, including teacher layoffs, program cuts, and class sizes. We understand that this is caused by a sluggish economy and have no interest in complaining at all about the hardships and displacements that have resulted. Everyone is having a tough time, and we have been willing to take our share of pain. My purpose today is to not ask you for any new money that does not exist. We get it. My purpose today is to simply ask you for the authority to manage the way through the crisis. Great challenges call for great bold action. In order for the budget, or to balance the budget, the state has shifted $2 billion of funding to E-12 education into the next biennium. This shift is costing districts around the state a lot of money, especially in context of funding levels, and have not kept up with inflation in the last decade. We believe that legislature should temporarily grant school districts much broader powers to manage. This authority should continue until the shift is largely repaid and adequate funding returns to public education. Our school boards are comprised of locally elected citizens who are superior in their position and make decisions that protect the quality of educational enterprise. They do not want to back away from that responsibility. They welcome the opportunity to exercise not only the responsibility of managing in a crisis, but also the authority and to take the necessary steps. We believe that the best decisions are made at the level that is closest to the people. This crisis gives us who support that belief an opportunity to practice. We are seeking a temporary tool that will allow the local school districts to combine the responsibilities that have with the authority they need. While we see the inherent wisdom of all categorical aids for special situations, it is necessary to give school districts the temporary authority needed to transfer this money from one fund to another without having to pass a bill at the legislature to get it done. This is just one simple suggestion, yet it would really empower districts on a temporary basis to preserve the quality of service they provide to our children. It is time to think anew and not linger along the same old ruts. Bold challenges call for bold action. Speaking for school boards and superintendents from 20-plus districts in southeastern Minnesota, we believe that this new authority will give us room that we need to manage until better times return. And better times will never return if we forfeit our future by shortchanging the children. I want to challenge you today. I challenge you to work for children across Minnesota. Consider all of your students your business and your responsibility. Put them first. Leave your differences behind and pull together for our young people. As I stated earlier, we are not asking for any new money. We are asking for the authority to to manage our way through the current financial crisis. We are asking for the authority to transfer money from one fund to another, which we believe will help preserve the quality of service to our children. In simple terms, we're asking for some local control. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Keese. And, sir? Please state your name.
Yes, my name is Mark Rubinek. I'm the superintendent in St. Charles. And as we looked at this bill, one of the things that kind of stood out for St. Charles is over the last few years, our deferred maintenance fund is growing. And the reason it's growing is because we went through a building project here about 8 years ago. And we have a head custodian that does an exceptional job of maintaining our facilities. And what we're seeing is our deferred maintenance fund growing, and as a result, it gives us an opportunity down the road, if we do run into some more financial difficulties because of the budget and the economy, to make some changes. So just reinforcing what was previously stated, it gives us some flexibility. And anytime we do make changes in our budget, the board takes it very serious. They're very careful about it. And we feel that giving them this responsibility and this ability can help us make some decisions when it comes to funds that we already have and could use more effectively. So we are very supportive of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony and for being here. Anyone in the audience have a brief statement on this bill? Yes, briefly, please. Come on down. Please state your name for the committee, and we have about 1 minute, please.
Thank you, everybody, for this opportunity. I currently unofficially represent the print disabled and twice exceptional. About this, one thing that wasn't explained to the public, maybe you don't know, but there's a chart that was a handout. I believe that's part of this process of what is yes and what is no. And then I believe the yeses mean 2 years, and if this bill passes, that the commissioner doesn't have to approve this, becomes permanent. It would be good to have a clarification for the public to understand that. And then secondly, when I speak, there's a minute sheet here with my name on it. However, it says parent, and I don't know if it means anything, but unofficially, I say I represent the print disabled and twice exceptional. Thank you for that consideration and this time for someone to explain this other sheet here. As it relates to parents' input regarding taxes, you know, because as you know, parents, when they pay their taxes in an area, as you know, No Child Left Behind allows for the public to play a role in that, and one of them is to pay their taxes. So are you removing dollars out of districts or across district lines that affect the choice of the public as they provide their feedback on referendum votes, etc.? Thank you for that time.
Thank you very much for being here. We'll now close public testimony. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just clarification, this was included in your packet because it was something put out relational to these funds for reference only. It is not specific to this bill. In fact, it was from last year.
Thank you very much. The chair does will lay over this bill for possible inclusion in a bill at a later date. And with that, we will recess to the call of the chair. Please listen for an announcement in session. Thank you.
Good evening, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee back to order. The first order of business is the Erickson bill. Representative Erickson, where are we sending your bill to?
Mr. Chair and members, I've been told it needs to go to Ways and Means. It has a little cost to it.
It does, okay.
But, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to find some money then.
Okay. Okay, so the Chair, Representative Erickson, will move Senate File 946 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Do we have a fiscal note on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, the Senate had a $25,000 cost when it was presented last session. I don't have a fiscal note on it, but that's the one that's been traveling with it.
Okay, so Representative Erickson, did the Ways and Means Committee ask?
No, they did not ask for it.
Okay, so Representative Erickson, we did have a hearing on this before, but any comments, or do we have an amendment?
We have two amendments, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let me grab my, for some reason, I...
So, Mr. Chair, I have the A6.
All right, so Representative Erickson will move the A6 amendment to Senate File 946. Now, Representative Erickson, would you like to explain it before we adopt it?
Mr. Chair and members, this is the agreement between Education Minnesota and me to ensure that when these pilots begin, that employees remain in their employing school district. That was very important to Education Minnesota, so I complied.
Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion is adopted. And then the A8 amendment, is that yours, Representative Erickson?
Mr. Chair, the A8 is also an amendment to 946, and I would like to move that.
Representative Erickson moves the A8 amendment. Please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In working with the department and trying to bring some resolution to some of the questions that they raised about the commissioner's role, I have inserted on page 2, line 17, interested groups of school districts must submit a completed application to the commissioner by March 1, 2013 in the form and manner determined by the commissioner. That's one of the changes. And then after must insert, this is the commissioner, then will convene an advisory panel composed of a teacher appointed by Ed Minnesota, a school principal appointed by the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, a school board member appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association, and a school superintendent appointed by the Minnesota Association of School Administrators to advise the commissioner on applicants' qualifications to participate in this pilot project. And then the commissioner must select only those applicants. And then on line 18, delete on first come, first serve, and insert by April 1, 2013. And then on line 19, after project, insert ensuring an equitable geographical distribution of project participants to the extent practicable.
Any discussion on the amendment, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
Oh, aye.
The motion prevails. The 8-8 amendment is adopted. And,
Mr. Chair, that puts this bill in the order in which I don't know if Representative Holbrook has not requested it. Maybe it could just go to the floor and then be pulled back if she requests it, unless you know of something else.
What we'll do is we'll send it to Ways and Means, Representative Erickson, just to make sure, because I did not, if their expectation is we're sending it to them, then we'll do that. In the event that the fiscal issue is cleared up and it doesn't apply anymore, then we'll move it to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's a wise idea, I guess. Okay. So,
do you have any additional testifiers, Representative Erickson?
No, I do not. I believe the department is on board and Education Minnesota is on board, so I think we're good to go.
This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill?
Mr. Chair, I did find out an interesting piece of trivia, though, because we've talked about all these laws that encourage or our signposts, like this one might be called. I found 300 of them in the statutes.
Are there any
300 sections of law that either encourage or kind of point a direction?
Seeing no members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill, we'll close the public comment portion of this bill and move to member questions. Any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, Representative Erickson renews her motion to have Senate File 946 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Representative Loon is not here yet, but I will. I've explained to Representative. Well, I'm not even going to say it. We'll just move. Let's go. So, Representative Loon is not here yet. So, I will move this bill on her behalf. The chair will move House File 2506 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Dietrich, would you feel comfortable explaining the bill to the committee, or would you rather that the chair do that? You're a co-sponsor on it, that's why I'm asking.
Oh, I think you better do that. I haven't opened it up yet.
Okay. Okay, members, this is 122A.61, subdivision 1, and I'm just, so members are aware, I'm just trying to be respectful of members of the committee's time, and so I'd We can wait for Representative Loon, but I'm not really sensing an objection from the committee if I present the bill. Okay, thank you. So this is with regards to staff development revenue, and right now there's a statutory allocation within staff development. This maintains... Oh, there you are. Perfect timing. I'm presenting your bill.
You want me to just... Are you good?
I think I'm just finishing up. So what happens is this maintains staff development revenue, but it eliminates the set-aside on that. Do you have anything you want to add, Representative Loon, before we move to comments from the public?
Well, since I have no idea what you said, no, but I, other than... I just, this is bipartisanly sponsored. It's a common sense initiative, and I think it really gets to the issue of letting the local school districts and their teachers and their staff decide how best to use their staff development money. I think this prescribed formula just really doesn't take into consideration the individual needs of the districts, and I think it makes sense to delete that from the statute.
Representative Loon, do you have any testifiers for your presentation?
I do.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Snezhana Besanov, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. And first of all, I want to thank Representative Loon for bringing this forward and the co-authors for supporting a committee for you considering it. So in accordance with the Delegate Assembly Resolution and 2012 MSBA legislative platform, MSBA asks for flexibility of staff development statute by allowing school districts to also have flexibility in assigning the funds. School board members desire for all teachers and other school district staff to have high quality professional growth and development opportunities, as they are designed for professional, for quality classroom instruction, enable individuals to grow professionally, and help teachers implement new technology and teaching strategies. That's ultimately leading to achievement of fundamental purpose, the improvement of student learning. Under the current law, school districts are required to set aside 2% of their basic education revenue for staff development purposes. And as you know, that's something that was waived for the current biennium. Now, the Minnesota Statute 122A-61 dictates the staff development revenue must be used for specific staff development activities as listed in the statute, which are school boards are required to allocate 50% of staff development revenue to school sites on per teacher basis, 25% for district-wide staff development activities, and the last 25% for school sites for best practices methods. Now, this House File 2506 that's in front of us would eliminate the financial restriction of 50-25-25, allowing for local control in distributing staff development dollars. MSBA believes that staff development should be an issue for school districts and their staff to decide. When school districts determine the staff development needs, the board, in consultation with the teachers, should be able to locally determine the percentage of dollar goes for each of the specific staff development activities. The automatic division of staff development funds can be challenging for schools, as the need exists for quality district-wide training that includes such items as the newly adopted teacher and principal evaluations, NCLB waiver requirements, and digital learning opportunities, just to name a few. And especially tight in the financial, tough and financial situations when it can actually be expensive for schools to just rigidly to follow the rigid automatic distribution of funds without looking at the full picture of the district. And I do also want to note that House File 2506 does allow school districts to continue following the same model, 50-25-25. That's something that works best for the district. And under this bill, also the school districts will also have to provide, as they do right now, they have to provide plans for staff development, and that's something that's going to be submitted to the department, and that doesn't change under this bill. So again, MSBA believes the staff development should be decided on a local level by district and their staff, and so we ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Loon, do you have any additional testifiers?
I did get an email that Mr. Amoroso wished to testify. I don't know if he's here.
Looks like he must have left already. So.
Okay.
Any other testifiers, Representative Loon?
No.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Jan? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Elsweiger, Education, Minnesota. The staff development law and the revenue associated with it is something that our teachers and school staff take very seriously. It is the one piece of law that really does help them improve their profession. What you were doing with this legislation, as indicated, is amending 122A.61. So you're taking away the 50% allocated to the school site and the 25% allocated to the district for their purposes, and then 25% for exemplary grants, et cetera. And we have passed a number of initiatives recently that our teachers, our school staff, rely on the ability to know that they're going to get some money in the district that they can use. Now, it's a 2-year suspension, right? Right now. So that's already in place. But what I think is often forgotten is that there's the 122A.60. That language is very carefully crafted to make sure that the staff development revenue in 122A.61 is spent wisely. For instance, at the district level in 122A.60, you have to have a majority of teachers, but they have to come up with a district plan that aligns with the district goals. Also in that part of the statute, the school site must develop a staff development plan that aligns with the district goals. This isn't money that is spent frivolously. This is money that is very important to their profession. You have passed QCOMP. They are supposed to use staff development funds for QCOMP. Recently, you have passed the K-3 literacy plan. That requires that you use staff development. We have the Minnesota Department of Education has an ELL written service plan that teachers use staff development to make sure that the teachers are servicing ELL appropriately. There's the Minnesota NCLB waiver, which requires professional development for classroom teachers, how to effectively meet the achievement gap for all the kids in the subgroups. There's just so many things that require staff development. In fact, the teacher evaluation law that you passed last year requires the use of staff development activities to help teachers improve. If a teacher goes through the teacher improvement process, they are supposed to have access to staff development funds. So you want the teachers to improve. We want them to improve. What this bill does is let the district say, we're going to decide how we spend that 2% staff development. If you wanted to empower people to make improvements, you need to give them the resources to do that. They aren't going to be spending frivolously. It's going to be aligned to the district goals. This is one that our teachers hold near and dear to their hearts because it is one way that they can say that I can help with professional development. Thank you.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslund, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Gary Amoroso was going to be here tonight, and he apologizes. So I just wanted to express our support for House File 2506. While we would like to see the staff development set-aside requirement to be permanently repealed, we think this is a good step in the right direction and think that it allows more flexibility for school districts. So thank you.
I have a bill for that. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I am here to speak in support of Representative Loon's bill, House File 2506. I don't want to cover a lot of the same ground that the MSBA did, but would echo those same sentiments and would remind you that Last year, a couple of very significant pieces of legislation passed, the Literacy Initiative and then the Teacher Evaluation Initiative. And our members feel strongly that locally elected school boards are going to need the flexibility to determine how to best spend those staff development dollars to make sure that those two initiatives are properly implemented and that all staff across the district are receiving the proper staff development to make sure that those are successfully implemented. So I'll leave it at that, but thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Lewin, for this authoring this important piece of legislation.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the bill and move to questions from members of the committee. Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this could be for either AMSD, MSBA, or I think what was the other, MASA?
Yeah, MASA.
Mm-hmm. So the question, I'm trying to understand Ed Minnesota's concern here. It sounds to me like one of their concerns is that whatever transpires with the use of the dollars, that there be ownership on the part of teachers, and it sounds like the earlier the better. And so maybe the general question is, how do you ensure that, in fact, there is that level? I mean, that makes sense to me that there's, you know, these are the professional instructors, that they're engaged from the beginning all the way out to the end with whatever staff development work is happening, as opposed to just sort of following along with whatever, you know, central command decides we ought to do at any given point in time. So how do you address that, or do you see that as an issue? And
there is no prohibition on approaching the microphone while the question is being asked.
They were flipping points to see who would do that.
Do you have a response for Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, the legislation really only gets rid of the what we would call a cookie-cutter approach to the distribution. I mean, it's the state dictating each and every school district how that money has to be allocated. And so it doesn't change the other, it keeps in place the 2% set aside, keeps in place other requirements that were previously in law. It's not going to end staff development committees or staff management committees that are already established at the district level. Management is going to continue to want the input of their staff on how to best use those professional development dollars. But what it does do is free up the locally elected school boards to determine how to best allocate that money. Maybe you have a district where they don't need 25% at a certain site, but they need a little more at another site because they have a younger staff, or they're implementing a brand new program in a building that year. Under the state mandated allocation, it's harder for them to do that. This would free up that ability to address local needs.
Representative Mariani, a follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kroonquist, so I get that. What about, this will be a softball question, I suppose, but, you know, so given that it sounds to me that, you know, all the adults getting in a room and agreeing to do something, and maybe this is a better question for Ms. Allswager, quite frankly, but do we need language that says, you know, okay, all adults get in the room together and do something, and do it bilateral, don't do it unilaterally? I mean, is that kind of part of the issue here?
Ms. Allswager, and thank you for coming to the microphone while the question is being asked. Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, even with this law that is currently in place, we have teachers fighting to try to get access to staff development dollars. They're trying to improve their profession, what is happening in their building, their instruction, and they still have fights with the district that some of them are not giving them access to it. We don't want, it's kind of ironic to think that the people farthest away from the kids, the school board, and I'm not saying that they're not educated or they don't understand the problems of the district. They are the ones who want to make the decision about what the individual teachers need in buildings. They've got, every building has some unique issues, the unique clientele, and the teachers want to be a part of that discussion about how they should spend the money for their building, still in line with the district goals. The principal is still included. They can have other staff included on that committee at the building site. I mean, Representative Peterson, you worked very hard on the teacher evaluation bill. It became law. And I would think that it would be very important for you, because we want to make sure that teachers are improving, that they have some say about what they need. If I was identified as a teacher who wasn't making progress, I would like to have some say, along with my administrator, about what we do. If the district holds the funds, they don't have to send money out. And there will be controversies, there'll be frustrations, because the money won't get there. We are in tight budget times. If you look at how the 2% staff development money is set, spent right now, a lot of it is spent on things that you would not expect. Would you think that teacher salaries during regular workshop days would be used for staff development expenditures? They are. We're not talking about a lot of money here.
Representative Marier. Oh,
thank you.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to, you know, thinking back about a half hour ago, we were all sitting on the floor, and I don't know how long we sat and listened to local control, local control, local control. That was the opposition to the bill. And we listened to many, many people oppose the legislation because we're not giving local control. You know, I understand, you know, this isn't, Ms. Falsberger, you say a lot of money, but, you know, sometimes we have to still trust our local school boards. We have to make sure that they will prioritize things as best they can. And sometimes there is a greater need. And, you know, and we've even had situations where teachers agree that there's a better need. And so it's not always adversarial. It's just a matter of, like you say, we're in tight budgetary times, and sometimes we need to do this. So I would certainly approve of giving that local control to the school boards. Thank you, Representative Loon, for bringing it.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Halswager, you're right. I do care about that. And I don't see how this bill and the changes that are being made to this bill necessarily change that. In fact, the site allocation in these instances is still going to be controlled by someone other than rank and file teachers. I would imagine the administrator is still going to control how those funds are allocated. And I support the teacher evaluations because for the first time we're going to take a look at tangible measures of student achievement and help inform that. And I think that helps in all cases. So I just, since you referred to me, I had to make a comment.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment in support of the bill. As many of you know, the Anoka-Hennepin School District just settled their anti-bullying lawsuit. And, you know, really overnight our school district has changed the federal mandates now that are being imposed on the school district and to train teachers, students in all sorts of areas. Mean hiring a whole host of people, training in some areas in a higher concentration than others. And so it is this type of flexibility that we need to fully implement something that we never found ourselves, we never thought we would find ourselves in this type of a situation. So this type of flexibility on this money is just one example of how that's going to really help a school district to be able to look at the district as a whole.
Representative Loon, you would like to renew your motion and make your final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, and I thank the committee for the discussion and all of the testifiers. And, you know, with regards to Ms. Allswager's comments, I don't think I disagree with any of them, with the exception of the fact that the importance of staff development, and that is clear. But I do think that very prescriptive formula does not allow our school districts, in consultation with their staff and their various buildings and what they need. I don't think those needs are able to be met as well as possible under this prescriptive formula. So we want to certainly keep the desire in there for all school districts to be doing staff development. It's incredibly important, especially in light of some of the reforms that are going on. And the areas of the law that require the board to establish an advisory staff committee, development committee to develop the plan, and assist in the staff development teams and working on those issues will still be in place. The reporting requirement will still be in place, so there's transparency for how those funds are going to be spent. So I think those are all good things to retain. Again, all that we're trying to eliminate is this one-size-fits-all formula within the area of staff development, and I would ask the committee for their support.
Members, so Representative Loon renews her motion for passage of House File 2506.
Yes.
To go to General Register.
General Register.
General Register. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Members, just a reminder that Representative Erickson's Reform Committee is meeting Representative Erickson at 6:30. Where?
Basement.
In the basement.
Thanks.
Members, we stand adjourned until January of 2000. Oh, no. We stand adjourned, members.
Nicely done. Nicely done.